It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Welcome to Quantum. Number one, we're starting all over again. This has been removed away from Solas. Don't worry, we've not had a fallout or anything like that. It's just this gives greater freedom and greater scope. And this is the Quantum of the Wee Flea, if you like, assisted by my colleague Al here.
Sometimes. I'll be here sometimes.
Yeah.
Other times it might be just you and your own when I'm working, doing other things.
Thanks so much for those of you who've contacted us to say that you appreciate it or to offer constructive criticism. And even those of you who've written to say how much you don't appreciate it, don't write to Solas anymore. You can write to me and I will just ignore your...
You can comment on his Facebook page. You can tweet him at The Wee Flea. The blog website, what's the address for the website? It's theweeflea.com.
Yeah, theweeflea.com. But I mean, the purpose here is, this is not about me, okay? What we're doing is the same thing as on the blog. We're trying to think about what's going on in the world from a Christian perspective. Now, that doesn't mean we get everything right. It does mean that sometimes you sail close to the edge. It does mean that sometimes you're going to contact us and say that was wrong, and I'm going to have to say, yeah, you were right, that was wrong, because we will get things wrong. But please do be assured, we're trying to look at the big picture in the light of God's word. And if you wanted a motto, I would simply say this: we must always read the culture through the lens of scripture rather than read scripture through the lens of the culture.
Which neatly brings us on to one of the biggest cultural trends that we're seeing in our society at the moment, in all churches, particularly in the UK, in Europe, to a lesser extent, but still ongoing in America, Australia. And it's an issue that has been personified by Vicky Beeching. What's going on, David? What's happened?
Okay, there are two narratives. One is that I am this nasty, vicious, conservative Christian fundamentalist who's harming this poor, vulnerable woman who's, and so on.
You made her cry.
Yeah. And the other is, so much so, you know, that we have to call in therapists and doctors and so on. And that's a narrative that's being spread. And therefore, ironically, I'm receiving a fair amount of hate mail on that particular subject.
For those who maybe don't know who Vicky Beeching is, tell us who she is, first of all, and then what's going on? Why did you write an article about her? What happened?
Well, Vicky's a relatively well-known Christian singer in some circles, and she, a couple of years ago, basically came out saying that she was gay and so on. And she's replaced, if you like, her career on the sort of Christian music scene in the States with being now seen as a prime advocate for gay rights.
Within the Guardian. The church. Yeah, within the church.
Well, even beyond the church. So the Guardian, the Independent, the BBC, you name it, they use her. And I think use actually is a phrase I would use advisedly. The Guardian called her probably the most influential Christian of her generation, which she's not, but that's what the Guardian wish her to be. Because her aim is to, she believes, she writes in her book, that the whole church will unanimously adopt the LGBTQI whatever agenda. And she believes that she's going to be an instrument to help that happen. And so that's her life at the moment. That's
her aim
campaign.
Is to change the theology of the church.
Yeah.
To become LGBTI affirming.
Whatever, yeah.
So I'm staying in the church. I'm not going to go forward for priesthood until I feel it's safe, which for me would be when they allow same-sex marriage and when priests are allowed to enter same-sex marriages themselves. But yeah, the book is really a book of hope, saying actually you can face your fears, you can fight these big giants, and you can live a life of peace and authenticity. The book's called Undivided, and for me it's about bringing faith and sexuality together.
There were two people in particular, Peter Linus of the Evangelical Alliance, who wrote a review of her book, and I wrote a review as well. And there's been a real, real pushback against those reviews. Now, I don't really want to go into all the details of those. You'll find that she's arguing strongly against corrective therapy.
Is it corrective? Do you mean conversion therapy?
Yes, conversion therapy.
There's a big debate about conversion therapy.
The government is about to announce it wants to eradicate so-called gay cure therapy.
which is mostly carried out by religious groups who say they can convert someone who is gay to being straight.
Can you change from being gay to non-gay? Now, the interesting thing is, apparently in our culture, you can change your gender, but you can't change your sexuality. I'm not sure what the reason for that. In fact, there is no reason. That's an emotive thing.
A lot of the guys like Tacho and a lot of LGBT activists would say that you can change
your
sexuality.
Yeah, you're on a spectrum and so on. But I think, I mean, there are things about conversion therapy that I think many people, including myself, I would look at it and go, well, I'm weird. But banning something, what are you actually banning? So Vicky, for example, argues that praying for somebody, would that be banned?
Well, throughout my 20s, I then engaged in more subtle forms of conversion therapy, which Paul knows about also, where you are just sort of prayed for and they try and find traumas and damage from your past, maybe sexual abuse or problems with your parents. And I was taught throughout my 20s by churches that being gay was actually damage that had been done to me because I was born straight. And that being gay was not God's best for me and I could be healed.
If somebody came to me as a minister and said, David, I'm same-sex attracted or I think I'm gay and, you know, would you pray with me? Am I allowed to pray with them?
Most of the many churches that still refuse to grant equality to LGB and T people don't run organised counselling or structured programmes that can be easily identified and then banned as conversion therapy. Instead, they typically engage in 5 practices, which individually and collectively work to undermine the mental health and well-being of LGBT people in churches. The first practice is informal prayer.
One of my friends was a former LGBT activist who the Lord converted. He wants to live in accordance with what the scriptures teach.
Yeah. Or you have somebody else, let's say, who has been involved in the gay scene, as I know somebody who has been, and when they began to delve into why they were so unhappy and all the other things, there's issues of rape in childhood and various other things, and they've gone for therapy to help with them with that. Is that conversion therapy? Is it
trying to deal with an underlying psychological trauma?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So the point about it is, Vicky wants the teachings banned. That's the point.
I think what we have to ask is one major question, and that is, why are people seeking these therapies in the first place? And for me and for many other people, the only reason that we're seeking change is because churches have told us that being gay is a sin. And I think you have to look at those core teachings.
And such were some of you, but you were washed, you were sanctified.
Yeah, exactly.
And then also from people in the UK who just really think that same-sex marriage is sinful and abomination. So those views do still exist. I think often we think, oh, it's the 21st century, it's England, it's London, you know, why would it be a big deal to come out? But it really is, for certain sectors, still a problem, and the church is one of them.
It's really interesting that you've got the likes of Steve Chalk and Vicky and others advocating that the state should interfere in the church and the state should tell us what our doctrine is.
Churches and Christians are now the single biggest barrier to LGBT acceptance and equality in society. So any effective legislation has to tackle these church issues.
And I think lots of us feel the same way, you know, that the LGBT rights issue is a deal breaker for us. So if we want to see young people in the pews, I think we need to see young people in the priesthood to kind of encourage that younger audience. But this LGBT issue is really blocking that. I call it a stained glass ceiling.
So that's my first concern in this. Then the other issue that then comes in with this is how this is done. And there's a form of emotional bullying. Now, this is how it goes. I did not post anything about Vicky Beeching on her Facebook page, on her Twitter feed or whatever. Then all this happened.
No, but you wrote an open letter.
I wrote an open letter,
her,
a review.
Which was a critique
I also wrote
of her book. Yeah. I mean, one of the strong points you made in your article was that actually you're not against her sexual orientation, you're against her theological orientation and the poison that it's introducing into the church and the damage that poison will do to Christian churches who accept it.
Yeah. My open letter was a review of the book. It was not a thesis on sex and sexuality.
But you read her book, you're responding to... Did you get in touch with her before you published it?
I wrote her and said, look, this is what I'm doing or I've written this review.
Privately?
And I'm going to put it, yes, I wrote privately.
Right.
And I didn't get any response from her, but I wanted her to know, one, it was nothing personal against her because I don't know her. And two, it would appear to be personal because I'm responding to a book. And this is the key thing, which uses the personal and says, because X happened to me, it was because of this theology. Therefore, anyone who holds to this theology is responsible for, either what happened to me or what happens to other people. So I critique the theology that says marriage can be between two women or two men. And immediately I am accused of, you are responsible. Somebody actually wrote and said, even whilst we've been having this conversation, there have been many teenage suicides caused by people who believe in your God throwing their teenagers out of their house, which is rubbish. There haven't.
Name them.
I did. I asked, and then I got things about teenage suicide and particularly teenage suicide for homosexuals and so on, which is another issue. But the point about that is, Al, is what goes on here is an incredible kind of emotional bullying. So I'll just give you an example of this personally. I received loads and loads of abuse. There's been a letter of complaint to Solas. Someone's reported to me to the Free Church for allegedly supporting child abuse, which I don't even remotely, or excusing it, which I don't even remotely. There's a whole range of different things that have happened. All different kinds of comments get made. But the thing that astounded me, it was Vicky's birthday, and she wrote on it, you know, this has been the most traumatic time I've had for a very long time. My therapist and my doctor are talking me through it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I thought, oh, that's horrible. Has she been getting a hard time on social media? So I went through her social media and I couldn't find one single insult against her. Hundreds against me, but not one against her. And I thought, wait a minute. Vicky is saying she needs a therapist because of something that she posted, and even more, that she sponsored and shared my article and her comments, which, by the way, were untrue about the article.
Why would someone, if she's sharing your article, have it sponsored to reach more followers? What's the thinking for doing that? Why sponsor it?
Well, I think the thinking is to say, here am I, I'm the victim. That's the bottom line. It's always, I'm the victim, I'm the victim. So I think that we need to be really, really careful here. It may be that what's going on here is Vicky is just being used. I mean, if she really is that fragile, the people who are using her should stop it, because she won't be able to handle the pressure. Or on the other hand, it may be, and it could be both actually, it may be that she's using. It may be that she's saying, look, I'm this weak, vulnerable person. How dare you do this? How dare you do that? And I'm just simply saying this. As a Christian, my job is, and as a Christian pastor, my job is to teach Christ's word and to do so in, I hope, in a way which is compassionate and so on. My concern for Vicky personally is where she's at spiritually. And I really do mean that. And I think just going along and saying, oh, you're a wonderful Christian, you've just got this bit wrong.
No, does it not reveal there's never really been a knowledge of the Lord?
Well, I mean, I question that. I don't know that. I question that. I question that in Review. And I suggest you go and read The View. I tell you what, let me say something about the whole Twitter storm and everything. Do you read The Spectator?
Occasionally.
I love The Spectator. Did you know that it was founded by a Dundonian?
I did. Fraser Nelson tweeted something recently.
Yeah, that's right.
His editor's a Scotsman. It was founded by somebody from Dundee.
That's right.
He's from Inverness. Yeah. You know, in what way is this not a Scottish publication?
Yeah. It was founded on the 6th of July, 1828, by the Dundonian printer Robert Rintoul. And recently we had a 190th anniversary edition. Now, let me read this. And this, obviously, we'll put this on the blog as well. The editor says this: in all this, something has been lost. Britain's long-standing tradition of robust yet friendly disagreement. These days, Twitter feeds emit howls of rage as otherwise sensible people go online to look for a fight. Social media tends to rely on shares, and that's why, by the way, you purchase or boost your post. And this study shows encouraging the posting of more and more rabid comments. The finest minds are whipped into hysteria because of their addiction to likes and dislikes. Disagreement quickly turns into personal abuse. Social media should be written off as a tiresome distraction, yet many publications and politicians let it dictate the parameters of our public debate. Isn't that brilliant?
That's true.
It's true.
That's true.
It's true. It's brilliant.
There's a wee Scottish Twitter story. There was something that happened the other week. The National had a story about the Conservative Party in North Ayrshire en masse deciding that all their local councillor politicians are going to basically suspend their Twitter accounts and come off Twitter because of some mildly offensive comments that were made by one or two of them.
Yeah.
That's an interesting response from the Conservative Party.
Yeah, so they're gone. Meanwhile, in Dundee, our old friend Gregor Murray, the man who is now, this is important, he is children and education convener of the local council. He has been involved in a really bad Twitter spat with myself. He's involved with one with Labour leader Kezia Dugdale. He's pretty infamous for the language that he uses. But
it's vile. It's much worse than anything those Tories wrote.
Yeah, even by his standards, his latest goal, which was attacking some TERFs, that's trans-exclusionary radical feminists who protested at the LGBT parade in London. So he had a go at them, and the language he used, we won't repeat it here, and so on. And he's been called out, and still he's in a job. Now, this is the man who is responsible for policing the internet use of children in Dundee and for the education. I mean, if that had been almost anyone else in any other job, he's gone.
Why is he still there, and why haven't the SNP taken disciplinary action against him? Because the tweets he's done are vile in comparison to the stuff that was going on in North Ayrshire from the Conservatives.
Well, I think it's because
different standards,
absolutely. I think it's because he claims to be bi and bisexual, and you know, he'll just claim discrimination against them if they do. But I can't see how he stays in. But meanwhile,
recognize within medical practitioners that this is the process and this is how you help trans people. And this guy is saying, no, I'm not going to help people because I don't want to refer to them how they are because of my religious beliefs. If this is his religious beliefs, then he should not be in the field, and he was right to lose his job.
You can't write off Christianity or religion just like that.
I can. Any religion. I'm not writing off Christianity.
You take everybody who's religious.
I'm writing off religion in if that's going to stop you from helping people. You're a public servant.
Okay. So do
working
you believe
for the NHS of any taxpayers' money, you should be helping people, not using your own beliefs to play God, essentially.
Okay. If you that's what you're doing. Everybody like me, from the NHS, there'll be no NHS left.
I'm not talking, you can have your own beliefs, but don't impose that on other people.
Okay, but there's a doctor in England being fired for not using transgender pronouns. For years and years and years of experience, he just refused. He said, I can't, and he's been fired.
They must have too many doctors down there.
Yeah, and then if you're looking at where we're going in terms of the culture and tolerance and all the rest of it, again, I just mentioned this, a fascinating article in The Australian on a case that turned up in Tasmania where the Catholic Church was being sued. It was eventually dropped, but was being sued for teaching the Catholic teaching on marriage, that marriage is between a man and a woman and so on. And you know, to have even the idea that the state can tell the church what to teach on the grounds that it wasn't inclusive enough.
Well, that's what Vicky Beeching and Steve Chalk are seeking to do here in this country.
Yeah. And then what we're finding, you see, the church is its worst enemy in this sense. So the US Episcopal Church has expanded gay marriage is to all the dioceses where bishops object. So even if the bishop objects, they're saying, no, you can have a gay marriage. We can send someone else in to do it and so on. And you should read the language that they use, which is kind of like language of this is conciliation. No, it's not. It's not. When you drink a little bit of the poison, the whole body is poisoned. And what they're doing is they are destroying the Episcopal Church. It really is. I mean, all these things.
We have that going on in Glasgow as well. Just this week, there has been a Roman Catholic chaplain at Glasgow Caledonian University has been removed from his job for holding a mass that was against Glasgow Pride. The principal of the university basically said that, we're for inclusion and diversity.
So we're going to exclude you.
So we're just going to exclude you.
We believe in diversity. Yeah. We believe in inclusion so much that if you don't believe what we believe, we're going to exclude you. Next week, we're going to look at this in a bigger context, because the whole issue of inclusion and authoritarianism from the state and everything else, these are huge, huge issues for us as a church. So we will come back to that next week. But let's think about Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London. This is what he said about free speech.
Sadiq Khan, we must start by talking about that balloon that was floating over Parliament Square. Lots of people thought it was a very witty, appropriate form of protest. Other people thought it was downright childish and dangerous.
Well, it wasn't my blimp or my balloon, but we have in our city.
You're responsible for it being up there, though.
We have in our city, in our country, as indeed does the USA, a rich history of the right to protest, the right of free speech, and the right to express our views. And the idea that we would curtail these rights because it may cause offence. And by the way, can you imagine the founding fathers in the USA or US jurists saying we're going to curtail our rights of free speech in America. We're going to curtail the First Amendment because somebody may be offended. And actually, what you saw on Friday was peaceful protest and done in a safe way.
But here is somebody who is coming here as a guest. He is going to be very, very important, not just to the UK, but specifically to London, how he treats us. He says he now feels unwelcome in London. It was designed to hurt him, and it certainly did hurt him. Is that really wise politics at the moment?
It's not my job as the mayor to censor the views of Londoners and others.
Now, just one simple thing about that. Mr. Khan is a hypocrite. Why? On the one hand, he's saying, look, they have the right to make a baby balloon of Donald Trump and put it out. But we're going to ban those who are post-gay from advertising on London buses. We're going to ban, as in up in Blackpool, for example, they banned Franklin Graham adverts. When he says it's not my job to censor the views of Londoners or others, that's precisely what they do. So that we've got this paradox of someone saying, well, we have to allow offensive speech if we're going to allow free speech, which in general, I agree with. But at the same time, banning lots of things.
We're all for inclusion, except we're going to ban you for expressing a Christian perspective.
Speaking of freedom of speech, let's think about this. Does freedom of speech mean that the BBC have a right to go and film Cliff Richard's house being searched?
Viewers may remember that the BBC put up a helicopter. So Cliff lived in a gated community, and the only way to get the pictures, the BBC argued, was to send a helicopter up, and that helicopter showed pictures of the police going into Cliff Richard's apartment.
When Cliff Richard was away on holiday, Yorkshire Police had received complaints about historic child abuse. I mean, this was happening to many, many celebrities. There's lots of others who were eventually found innocent, as he was completely. And
there was never any charges or...
No, he wasn't even charged. It was, I mean, in other words, it was completely false. But the police told the BBC that they were going to search his house. Now, that's the horrendous thing there.
Yeah. And that's why the Yorkshire Police settled.
Yes, of course, because what they did was
wrong. Very quickly.
The BBC then said, oh, this is wonderful. We'll get a helicopter. And we had a live. It was live. This Cliff Richard's home being searched on account of professed child abuse. And you had the ridiculous thing of cameras going in the window and seeing his underwear being pulled out of drawers and various other things. And all this was live. So it was utterly horrendous.
What is significant about this ruling is that the judge found that it wasn't the, if you like, sensationalist nature of that reporting, the putting of the helicopter up, that breached Sir Cliff's privacy. It was the very fact that the BBC published his name and broadcast his name as a suspect, and I stress the word suspect, in a police investigation.
You're talking about the right to privacy. That's the essence for which he sued.
The judge has also made clear that even if there'd been no footage of the search and the story had less prominence, the very naming of Sir Cliff would have been unlawful. This creates a significant shift against press freedom. This means police investigations and searches of people's homes could go unreported and unscrutinised. It will put decision-making about naming individuals in the hands of the police over the public's right to know. We don't believe this is compatible with liberty and press freedoms. For all of these reasons, there is an important principle at stake. That is why the BBC is looking at an appeal. Thank you.
But the problem with the BBC position is this, especially if you're famous, it's kind of no smoke without fire stuff.
What this case establishes is that anyone who is a suspect in the early stages of a police investigation before charge has a reasonable expectation that that matter should be kept private and not covered by the news media. And that's the real significance of this ruling.
And so I think that the BBC were entirely wrong. The judgment was entirely correct. And I think of the torture that that man went through.
I can't really answer too many questions at the moment. It's going to take a little while for me to get over the whole emotional factor. And so I hope you'll forgive me.
So we do believe in freedom of the press, but it has to be just, you know, and freedom of speech. And you can't just go and make accusations against people in public without substantive evidence. I think that's the point. That's what we call slander.
Yeah.
Let me just give you something to look at.
A good part of my sanity rests on the belief that there is a just God, and if there is a just God, there's an afterlife.
A fascinating conversation between Dennis Prager. Have you ever
Dennis Prager?
Prager. Have you ever looked at Prager? You?
Yeah, I've seen some of his videos. I mean, he's for those who don't know who Dennis Prager is, he's a Jew, an Orthodox Jewish believer in America. And he's quite a famous, was it radio, television?
Yeah, he does. He's really one of these guys who's used YouTube. He's fascinating. He's a brilliant thinker. So this discussion between Prager and Ben Shapiro is fascinating. If you've got the time, have a look at it.
What happened? Why is it that religion seems to have lost its sort of appeal? Maybe it's coming back. And we'll talk about that in a second. We'll talk about whether you're optimistic or pessimistic in a second. But what happened in the 1950s, 60s, 40s? Why exactly was it that this religious worldview that gave birth to the greatest country in the history of the world, people just decided to toss it overboard?
Because the generation that's called the greatest generation, the World War II generation, which was a great generation, greatest or not, they were great. They made one horrible mistake. They didn't teach their kids what made America tick. And part of it was the Bible. They were so preoccupied with making sure their kids didn't have a depression. I don't mean psychological depression. I mean economic depression. And that they wouldn't know war. That's all they wanted. Peace and prosperity. That's all that generation ended up caring about. So they taught their kids nothing about America and nothing about God and the Bible. And the results are the chaos that we see today, where teachers can't even call their kids boys and girls because of this the ultimate irrationality of denying that there is male and female in the human species.
Do you believe in angels?
Yes.
Okay. Well,
we've got Michael's my favorite, then Gabriel.
Yeah, well, your own personal angel. I mean, I believe in angels too. I believe what the Bible teaches about angels. But it's bizarre when you go into bookshops, isn't it? That there's more books about angels than there are about Jesus. Mm. I'm talking about secular bookshops.
When the focus isn't on Christ, when the focus is on something else, then it's another spirit at work.
Yeah. Well, there's an Irish lady called Lorna Byrne or Byrne.
Lorna Byrne.
Byrne. Lorna Byrne. Who is an angel visionary, and she sees angels everywhere. And if she was in this room, she would see your angel around you, and she would tell you whether the wings were over your eyes or whatever was going on.
My personal favourite is the unemployed angels at the back of the room.
Yeah.
Her attention.
Are you seeing angels waving?
Yes.
They are?
Unemployed angels.
Unemployed. You mean
I call these angels unemployed angels. And they're in abundance here. And they're just doing this, Lorna, us here. What? So I'm just saying, don't worry, I'll mention you. I know you're there.
So how do we start to employ these angels?
Well, all that you have to do is today, this moment, just say, I'd love an unemployed angel to come home with me.
There you go.
And to help me with the everyday trivial things.
And you don't have to feed them either.
You don't have to feed them.
Yeah. Now, she's got this lovely voice and this lovely manner and, you know, love is love, and she comes out with all the cliches. And in a sense, I'm almost joking about it, but how dangerous and dumb this stuff is, you know, and the harm that it causes. And again, in our world, isn't it astounding that books like that are number one on the bestsellers list?
Yeah, yeah. People are desperate to believe in it.
Yeah.
But it's also, I mean, she comes up with the kind of almost like all religions are the same, a universalism.
I know one of the most important one is where all faiths come together, literally come together and pray together and do, it's like become one big family. And I think that is very important because we need peace between countries, but we have to have peace between faiths as well, no matter how much denial we are in of that. So we need to embrace each other. And I suppose, remember, it's the one God, you all have a guardian angel. It doesn't matter what faith you are, or even if you say, I'm of none.
That's so appealing to itching ears, isn't it?
It absolutely is. Right. Next week, we are going to have a look at this big issue of freedom, authoritarianism, and the dangers of what I would call a liberal authoritarian society. And we'll explain a whole lot more of what that means next week. But just now, let me leave you with this great quote that I picked up from George Santayana. People never believe in volcanoes until the lava overtakes them. God bless.
We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge and oddly enough, but makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising, loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in this society, hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.